And we are live on Blog Talk Radio for Falcon Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy Impact York. Joining me once again, glad to have you back, of course, is the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing well, Jeremy, but so.
I'm doing pretty good. Just when we think we're going to have a slow week, it has been a couple weeks since Falcon Zone's been on. This thing called free agency starts, and suddenly we have a whole slate of things to talk about.
It's that time of the year.
It definitely is, and I know your schedule's picked up probably twice or three times as great as it was probably even a month ago. So we'll definitely try not to keep you too long here, but like I was saying, there are tons to get into, and as soon as we get a few little messages out of the way, we can jump right into it. Because, of course, like I said, we are here for Falcon Zone right here on Blog Talk Radio. We're presented today by Impact Media, and without further ado, let's get right into it. As we've teased all day long, we're going to change it up a little bit today. We're going to jump right into Falcon stuff first because the big hot topic here in Atlanta, and by far it's the hottest topic probably of the whole season, the future of Roddy White with this team. Well, I was going to come on and report that according to Coach Quinn, Roddy's future was currently undetermined, but as of about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon, the Atlanta Falcons have released Roddy White. Now, we're going to go a bunch of different directions with this, but what's your overall take, Coach, with the release of Roddy White?
Well, I don't think that anybody was surprised that Roddy was released from Atlanta. It's that time of the year in which all teams have to look at their salaries and look at the cap. And I think for a couple of years, that has been coming for Mr. White. But if you looked at last year alone and you looked at how he played such a small role in the offense as an impact player, I think the writing was on the wall. So I don't think that he didn't see it coming either. What I did find surprising, however, though, is how Atlanta went about it, being that he's one of the premier players in the organization, being the all-time receiving yards leader. For them to have texted him, I found it to be kind of odd and or unique within itself. Normally, when you are dealing with a player of his stature and of his caliber, normally you'll bring the player in and have a face-to-face or at least a phone conversation and give the player the option of whether or not they like to have a face-to-face. So I found that a little striking, being that he was on vacation from my understanding, and it was done by way of text. So, but that's technology for you. So if that, you know, was suitable for him, I think he got his answer. And I think at this point he quickly just moves on with his agent to find another place of employment.
Right, and we'll get into some of those places we think he could go here in a second because I think the list is the list could be quite big, but I think it's actually down to just a handful of teams. But, I had heard that too, that he was actually on vacation when he got the phone call or his agent called him or something like that. So without making big assumptions, I think we can all – determine probably who in the organization made the decision there, and we'll leave it at that because I know our listeners know exactly what we're talking about. But some quick Roddy stats real quick, and I want to give credit where credit's due here. One of our listeners actually sent this list of stats to me a little bit earlier, so appreciate it, Billy. Roddy was drafted 27th overall. That was a first round pick by the Falcons in the 2005 draft. He spent the last 11 seasons with the Falcons. He has 11,232 yards, which are almost all that is regular season. Just has almost 400 in the playoffs. 842 receptions, including 62 in the playoffs. And he is the Falcons record holder in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, receptions, targets, and games played by a wide receiver. That's some pretty impressive stats for 11 seasons.
Yeah, I agree. And for the fact that he stayed healthy, you know, most of those years, primarily a lot of those years, says a lot about his durability and the numbers that they put up and the faith that the organization had in him and making sure that he was at least 70% of their offense.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And, as we get into, as we alluded here a few minutes ago, you know, if you had to pick maybe one or two places you think he could go, what you know, one or two teams do you think are probably towards the top of the list?
Okay, I can easily see him making the transition into Tampa because Mike Smith would be there. There's some help that they can use with having a young receiver, the kid from Texas A&M, Davis, down there, and having a mentor there for him. He can also complement Carolina. They're going to probably have some room there because they're going to have to make a lot of moves. And the receiver was one of the areas in which they did well but could probably benefit from veteran status. Last but not least, I would like to probably say I can see Jacksonville making a move for him as well. That would keep him logistically close by, but that's a team that could also use some receiving help and use some veteran status. So he'll have some options there, and I think that those are the immediate impact teams.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of the ones I was going to, but one occurred to me, and it's kind of a little bit of a stretch before I get into my home run call because I absolutely think I know where he's going to end up. I like the Tampa call. I like the Carolina call. He could stay in the division. New Orleans doesn't have the money to pay their own players, let alone anybody new. But, you know, why wouldn't somebody like an Indianapolis who just needs a veteran leadership just for a couple years, sign him to a one- or two-year deal like they did Andre John and let him play out the career? Or, of course, there is Tennessee, which he could join Harry Douglas up there, and that's pretty close by as well. But actually, I think we're about to be joined by a pretty good one of our bigger special guests here. So I'm going to bring him straight on because I know he's going to have an opinion on this guy. Joining us right now, of course, the third part of our trio, Mr. Reggie Walker. How you doing, Reggie?
Hey, Jeremy. How you guys doing? Sorry I'm late. Just getting out of the airport here.
See, I was going to say that. I figured maybe you just touched down a few minutes ago. Glad you could actually join us. And I'm not sure how much of it you heard, but, you know, we were starting with the Roddy White talk. We had talked about what he's kind of meant to the organization, and we just kind of threw out some teams, places we think he's going to go.
Oh, okay. First of all, let me, if you guys allow me to pay homage to him.
Sure.
Again, I go back to Roddy White being with the Falcons, you know, Vic first coming in as quarterback, and, you know, the skinny little kid that we all put all his faith into. Had a case of the dropsies his first year, but he figured it out, and he became all that we could ever have ever wanted out of a number one receiver. So, Roddy, if you're out there listening, man, it's been a pleasure having him as what I consider to be the best, and that's no slight to Billy White Shoes Johnson and Terrence Mathis and some of the other guys, but in my opinion, you know, he's by far currently the best Falcons receiver we've ever had. So with that being said, I don't know. I my mind kind of goes two ways. I feel like he'll end up I heard you guys mention Tennessee. I can see that as a dark horse. But I kind of think – I'm thinking Carolina and I'm thinking Tampa would be the two biggest, you know, teams that may go after him. Now, that being said, I wouldn't necessarily rule out him returning to the Falcons with some, you know, smaller portion of a contract. Just because, from what I understand, he's extremely loyal to the team. I'm sure he and Arthur Blank have had some personal conversations. And there's nothing, you know, more than we'd like to see him retire as a Falcon. So those are my three. I think Tampa first, obviously. He's got Mike Smith and Dirk Cutter down there who are very familiar. He can definitely help Jameis out. Coach and I had some conversation about just whether he would play windows, play in a slot and those types of things. But Carolina, he can obviously help Kelvin Benjamin out as well as Cam Newton. And, again, I still – you know, wouldn't rule out him possibly coming back to Atlanta with a smaller contract.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, I think those are the top three choices as far as, you know, us experts, air quotes and all, would say is between Tennessee, Carolina, and Tampa. And, you know, this allows us to play a small game that we haven't played in a while, mainly because we haven't been on. But, you know, without further ado, we're going to play Can We Fix It?
Can we fix it? Yes, we can. Can
we... Of course we can fix it. A lot of the fans want to know if, in case Roddy doesn't return, how do we fix filling in the void that was his position on this team? And I'll let one of you guys take it over. I feel like we're going to agree on this.
Well, you know what? I've actually given this some thought even long before they got rid of Roddy, so I'll jump right in. There are a couple of guys in free agency that, you know, Mohamed Sanu is one guy. Travis Benjamin is another guy that's been talked about. As the heavy favorites. But there's a kid in the draft that I think could possibly fall into the third or fourth round that could definitely, in my mind, come in and spell Roddy White. I know there's the kid from Notre Dame, and I forget his name, but I think he'll be gone long before the Falcons get to him. But there's a guy by the name of Tyler Boyd out of University of Pittsburgh. Broke all of Larry Fitzgerald's records as a receiver. Doesn't have world-class speed, but the kid has hands, and he runs routes better than most college receivers out there. So that's who I'd like to see them fill that position with. Just go into the draft. I think at this point, you know, you've got enough between Justin Hardy, I think, and maybe picking up another veteran off the street. But I like to see them go draft and draft Tyler Boyd out of University of Pittsburgh.
All right, I can see that. Coach, what do you think?
Well, I agree with Reggie. I think that they're going to go into the draft. They need to get younger for the long haul. So I think that they'll take someone out of the draft. I mean, you have a few veterans out there, but I think in this case, with them making that type of move and saving that kind of money, that money will be tied up in the draft pick. They'll probably pull a receiver first round if they don't take a lineman.
I was going to say, more than likely, that money is going to be tied up in the defense. I mean, there's the Trevathan kid that they're going after. They've made known in Denver. There's obviously Bruce Irvin, who's going to command what many could believe a $9-plus million-per-year contract. I mean, they've got to get better on defense, and I think that's where all of their free agent money goes.
Yeah, probably so. And is Will Fuller the wide receiver you're thinking of at Notre Dame?
Yep, that's the kid. I mean, I don't think that guy gets out of the top 10, honestly.
Probably not, because there's a lot of teams that could definitely use that. But since you brought it up, we didn't really have it on the sheet, but I did want to get into that. With all the free agent possibilities coming up, a lot of people keep going past Trevathan, and I think Danny Trevathan is probably the diamond in the rough of this entire free agent class. So I'm glad to hear that Atlanta is trying to pursue him. But you also brought up Bruce Irvin, and from everything that I've heard, because obviously also I have some eyes and ears down in the Atlantic Coast side of Florida. From what I hear, Mr. Irvin may already have a foot into the teal and black down there.
I mean, obviously he's got Gus Bradley, whom he's also familiar with. But, you know, the key for Irvin is obviously he's an ATLian. He's homegrown. So that, if anything, if there's a draw, and not to mention Irvin would get to come to Atlanta and actually be the man, right?
Sure.
There wouldn't be anybody else that would be more marquee on that defensive side other than maybe Trufant. So he'd get to come here and really kind of shine. So, yeah, I think it'll come down to between those two teams. He obviously can't go wrong going either way. Jacksonville's up and coming. We talked about that a lot over the past few shows. Got a chance to see them in person. And they're definitely a team on the rise. So he can't go wrong either way.
All right, Coach, what's your thoughts on possibly pursuing Danny Trevathan and Bruce Irvin to the ATL?
Well, I think it's a natural fit. I think that's part of what Coach Quinn was looking at as he looked at the defense, as he evaluated the team defensively, where his strong point is. But also on the offensive side of it, too, he had to look at the line. The line, you know, it has suffered over the last couple of seasons, so that's also a concern. So I think he'll shoe up the guys that he wants, and I think he knew that going into Atlanta. That was part of him taking that job, knowing that he would have the flexibility. But overall, they also have to look at the offensive line as well. They've got to do some things there, and they also got to do some things at quarterback as well. They got to have somebody behind Ryan at this point, because if he takes an injury, they're starting from scratch at that moment, and they can't afford that.
Yeah, that's interesting. You guys brought up offensive line. Alex Mack. Look for Alex Mack, Atlanta, to play make a big push for Alex Mack, too. He's voided out his contract in Cleveland, and he's now a free agent. Center was obviously a horrible position for Atlanta. Just look for Atlanta to make a strong play for that guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If they're not going to take your advice and bring back Mud Duck, then I think Alex Mack is on the radar of Atlanta and Jacksonville once again. But we mentioned all year long that Matt Ryan needs somebody behind him, A, if something happens to him, and B, to kind of light a fire, like, you know, we can bench you if we need to. I got a name right now. When I heard that his current team wasn't re-signing him, I immediately said he should be Ryan's backup, because it also buys the organization a year. So I don't really like this year's quarterback draft. I think the next couple years are going to be better as far as a young prospect. But what do you guys think of Matt Hasselbeck as the backup for Matt Ryan?
I think he's no different than the guy that they're currently talking about, which is Matt Schaub. I mean, he may be definitely a lot more serviceable, but he's not that guy that can push Ryan. I don't really know that there's anybody out there right now short of maybe getting an RG3, which, again, he's gonna command starter money, and there are going to be some people out there looking at him to actually start. But that's the guy that I think, you know, if you really want to find out what you've got in number two, I think that's a guy that can come in and make some waves for him. You talk about creating competition, that's the guy that can do it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think they really do need to do one or two things. They either have to find a very serviceable vet that can come in now and push Ryan, or they have to go into the draft high than they normally want to go, maybe even at third round with a backup that's going to be strong enough in 2 years to push him. So they're at a point now where they got to make some decisions, and that is one of the positions that they have to most definitely be talking about as far as the organization is concerned as they move toward the draft. At this point, they have to do something there, because that's the only position that wasn't challenged or hasn't been challenged or probably questioned in the last couple of years.
Now, I want to throw this name out here too, Jeremy and Coach, and you guys let me know what you guys think. This is a possible draft pick that will probably go fairly low in the draft, if he's even drafted, that will probably give you the best of both worlds, and A, that he has been a quarterback and converted to a receiver and did some damage on the receiving end, and that's Mr. Braxton Miller out of Ohio State.
Ooh, that's a wild card there for sure. That's as much as I couldn't cheer for him during his college career for obvious reasons. Wouldn't mind seeing him in the black and red.
And he's expressed some interest, as several, who want to actually come and play with Julio Jones. And it just reminds me of, hey, when you start putting those guys in place, you know, those guys want to play with the greats. And I think, you know, he's one of those sleepers that, you know, like Coach mentioned, you don't have to worry about him starting right away. You can even bring him in as a receiver, but kind of like in a Randall L type of scenario, or even Cordell Stewart back at one point in time in the old Slash days. You know, there's a guy that could be serviceable on both ends.
Yep,
that would be a great move for Atlanta. That would be a great move for Atlanta, because that way they'll get a two-for-one. They could satisfy, you know, two positions with one actual athlete and just kind of see where it goes. I don't think that's a bad idea. That may be something they've actually explored when it comes to somewhere around the third or fourth round for themselves.
I mean, those are the types of Bill Belichick. We talk about, you know, some of the brilliant moves Ron Wolf, Bill Belichick, guys like that make. I mean, that's one of those gambles, that, you know, those risks, that's worth it, right? I mean, the kid hadn't been in any trouble, you know, short of the, you know, the competition issue at Ohio State. But he proved he can actually handle the quarterback position short of an injury. You know, he probably still is the number one guy up there. But he also came in as a team player, took on the receiver spot, and actually put up some pretty big numbers as a receiver and did some dynamic things. So that's just one of those guys, man. Keep an eye on him. I mean, he could go. He's going to go late, late if he's drafted at all. But if he does, he's going to probably be a fifth or sixth rounder, and that's a guy that you can bring in and kind of groom for both positions.
I think this just speaks to the fact that this show is growing the way it is. We had a texter and a fan of the show text in and say that he believes, in fact, to quote him, quote, "Dude, Miller is going in the first or second round," unquote. Now, of course, this is coming from Ohio State, homer of a fan, but yeah, I agree that he's probably going to go. I think he's going to go somewhere on day two somewhere. I think he's maybe third or fourth round. He had a pretty good workout. I believe he was at the combine. I'm pretty sure he was. I feel like I saw him there. But, yeah, he's done nothing but raise his draft stock, and the fact that he told Atlanta he would love to be a Falcon only made other teams start to pay attention to him.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting. Atlanta's got some pretty decent picks. I actually honestly would not surprise me if they don't get the guy that they want, and they haven't really shown their hand very much about who they're looking at. I'm sure it'll be a defensive guy, but I don't think if they get who they want, it wouldn't surprise me to see them trade down and pick up some additional picks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to run through the next few things real quickly because there's some NFL stuff I want to get to. Some of it's almost throwaway by now because it happened a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't that big even then. But to finish up the Falcons stuff, I want to send out a happy birthday shout-out to Tony Gonzalez. I believe he turned 25 on Saturday. It sounds about right. And safety Ricardo Allen has been at the training facility the last week or so, been working on his hands and I believe some of his running and mobility. I believe this is his way of saying, don't worry about the free safety spot, I got it.
I'm still not convinced. I mean, I think he's a great rotational guy, but I don't see him as a starter. I know he made a couple of great plays, but still not that guy I'm looking for over the top.
Well, now, to be fair, Coach, before you chime in, he does take a pretty mean picture there. It was a nice picture of him inside because of the rain, obviously, that we've had for some reason here in Atlanta. It's a new concept for it to rain in Atlanta. But, I mean, he was right there with the football thrower machine or whatever. I mean, it looked like he was in good shape. So, I mean, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. I hope those, at least half those words are, I'm the free safety, don't draft one.
Well, I mean, let's give him he'll get his shot. But you know he's got to play big.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Coach.
That's the thing I was going to add. Is that he's there early because he knows the level of competition. He knows that he gets a slight edge because he's already been within the system. But to convert it from corner to safety is an easier conversion than it is to go from safety to corner. And him going to free safety won't be bad for him. He tends to guess a little bit, so that gives him some range. To kind of help, and that kind of disciplines him as well because he has to play a lot of plays over the top as free safety. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Atlanta does in camp with that.
And real quickly, obviously in the last few weeks I've thrown out some names, and when you guys have been on, we've thrown out a few more. But in my opinion, as far as the Falcons' first round, I think they are still looking at either Kevin Dodd, who I believe may have hurt himself at the combine, but he should be fine, and Shaq Lawson. Do you guys agree it might be down to those two?
Yeah, those are the two guys I think they'll target at that position or at that pick.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I like Dodd over Shaq, but, you know, that's my personal.
I absolutely agree, hurt or not. And it's nothing personal to Shaq Lawson, but I think Kevin Dodd fills the position a lot better as far as what they're going to want out of him than Shaq Lawson.
Also, don't be surprised to see Sean Weatherspoon back in Atlanta.
Oh, I'm sure he's already back. Or do you mean as a Falcon?
As a Falcon. I think don't be surprised to see it.
I can see that. But real quickly, I do, me and Coach, beforehand, we're talking right before you come on, right before we start the show, actually, about the combine as far as giving coaches career history as being a scout and coach and obviously all that. As far as the combine, Coach, what kind of things would you look for as far as a scout? Are there certain things you're looking for, or does it just vary on what the team's looking for at that time?
Well, throughout the year, the team is always putting together information on players. Actually, they'll begin to start tracking a player somewhere around his sophomore year. You will get exceptions to the rule like you have in Chubb down at Georgia, who by far is putting up phenomenal numbers as a freshman. Well, when we go in, we pretty much have an agenda and a plan that's pretty much put in place as to what the team – you're always going by team needs first and then next best thing. So there are scenarios when you're looking at drafting, you're looking at trends that the organization has had at positions for quite some time. That normally determines your first and or second round pick. But most definitely when we're there, we're actually assessing the player a lot of times for the first time in a very critical type situation. Pro days offer some of the similar things, but it offers a level of comfort. Taking them out of their comfort zone and inviting those 300 players up to the combine automatically says that, you know, we have selected you as some of the better guys by far that we're looking to draft. Their regiment there is very, very tedious and strenuous. Their days start at 3, 4, 5 in the morning with drug tests and interviews. So by the time they get to the field and what you see actually on television, they've already spent about 8 to 9 hours earlier that day. So they're really burnt by the time they get there. And the purpose for that is to go ahead and start molding them into professional athletes. You know, one of the things that we're looking for is maturity naturally. You know, if a player is an extrovert or introvert, how much confidence does he show in the ability to play the position? But we're also skinning them down, if you will, for the lack of better terms, to be able to physically look at the player. So now we get a official height, an official weight. We get official 40 times that are laser clock versus handheld. So all of these things, as well as getting all of those tangibles down, we're also looking for, does all of this stuff now translate into the field of play with football IQ and body mechanics and things of that nature. So there are a plethora of checklists that we have, but sometimes your stock can go up, which you hope that it does, and sometimes it can go down. But for those players that choose not to participate in the combine, it's like almost, you know, it's like having two shots versus one. When their pro day rolls around, if they run a bad time, that's it. That's the time that's going to be living amongst the profiles forever. It's out there in eternity. However, if you come to the combine and don't do as well, you still have your pro day, and we can assess that. So it's a lot that goes into the combine and looking at those kids and really wanting to know if they're going to really live up to the height that the media director has done so brilliantly over the last 4 years in a college program.
I think that's some great insight because I don't know about you, Reggie, but I've never coached before. I've unofficially scouted a few times, just happened to be there next to a scout, probably bugging them. But I've always wondered what went into, you know, when you go to these combines, because as a fan, I would just be excited by a certain time or a good performance where, you know, sometimes even scouts like Coach would look at it and go, well, it wasn't as good as you think it is.
Right, right. But, you know, obviously I have always leaned towards Coach Hill and when it comes to and yielded more to his expertise and his vast knowledge on that. One of the things I also wanted to throw out there, too, and it just hit me, as we talked about the two teams previously with Mr. Irvin, is Atlanta and Jacksonville both still have bought the exclusive rights to that performance technology that they have. So I'm wondering, you know, how that's going to play out in this draft as well.
The plate force test or the force plate test or something like that.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, guys, and I also would like to add this, too, and I'm happy that you brought that up as well, Reginald. Thank you. one of the things also, guys, that they're doing different, and they have been for the last couple of years, in what we like to use, as I like to call the monitoring process, is that they're using what they use now in scouting, what they call the matrix, okay? And what this matrix does, if you've ever watched an NFL combine, they will take a player of similar height, similar stature, and they'll say, well, who does the player remind you of that is currently playing now? And then they'll look at all of the measurables of that player to see if the player is sizing up. And that also helps in determining, if you will, some type of forward thinking as to the ability of the player. Now, sometimes it doesn't pan out, but most of the time, the way they've got this matrix down packed, it pretty much kind of gives you an idea of what you're getting in the tangible numbers and the transitional play of the player.
Yeah, you know, Colin Cowherd did that the other day with the top quarterback prospects. He compared them to somebody who's already in the league. And what struck me as just odd, and it may be a reflection of why the team never seems to put it together, but a lot of Browns fans didn't like the fact that they're pretty sure the team's going to take Jared Goff more than likely, and that he was being compared to Matt Ryan, to which I replied, how many Cleveland fans would give their left arm to have Matt Ryan as their quarterback right now? I think that's a great comparison, and if you told me that my young prospect was going to be Matt Ryan in the NFL or the next Matt Ryan, I'm good with that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, because, again, gentlemen, and this is coming from somebody who, you know, I've obviously had my issues with number two, but one of the things that I said, and I've said it to Coach several times, that you can say about Matt is over his body of work, he has been a winner, A, and then B, he has not missed a season at all. He hasn't even missed a game during his NFL career, regardless of whatever offensive line he's had in front of him. So I'm with you, Jeremy. I mean, so far, no, you know, you, all things aside, you know, he's durable and he wins.
Yep, absolutely. And as we get more into some NFL stuff, we're going to try to go quickly through some of it because, like I said, it's mainly worth mentioning and the quick takes we'll have. As far as people who are no longer in the league, of course, Pittsburgh tight end Heath Miller and Gerard Mayo of the Patriots have retired. You know, quick notes about them, the things that come to mind. Gerard Mayo, I believe, is the first or second favorite player of Bill Belichick that he says he's ever coached. That and his little daughter is not only awesome, but she's great at interviewing people. And then I'm not sure what Pittsburgh's going to do without Heath Miller, except for, you know, either have to trade for a tight end or just completely change the dynamic of that team.
Well, from Pittsburgh's perspective, they were very reliant on the tight end spot as much with Mr. Bryant and you know, and those guys on the outside. But they're definitely going to have to figure out somewhere to, you know, some replacement for him as well. But I think they've got bigger problems on the defensive side of the ball as well. As far as Gerard Mayo, yeah, definitely. But, you know, again, Bill Belichick is the master of plug and play. So I think, you know, while his skill set will be missed, he'll quickly find someone else to fill his slot. The other guy that I want to mention, too, in retirement, Jeremy, is Marshawn Lynch.
Yes.
For a couple of reasons. A, I've read a statement that now that Houston has released Arian Foster, that they expect Seattle to take a kick in the tires with him. But I also wanted to more importantly bring up, and this is something that we've talked about before, Mr. Lynch in his retirement and not purportedly not having touched any of the $49 million that he had on his last contract, and how that just desperately needs to become a blueprint for some of these players that are coming into the league right now.
Yeah, I agree, Reggie. One of the things I wanted to add and just kind of piggyback off what you just spoke about, and I mentioned it earlier, and I told Jeff when we talk about it on the show, is that you know, as players begin to retire, you're going to start seeing a lot more of that, where players are going to be out of the league in 5 or 6 years. If you guys remember a couple of years ago, I mentioned that your new veteran would be only probably a player that has about 6 or 7 years under his belt, no more than 10. Because now, I think with all of the things that went on with the concussions and just the quality of health and life thereafter, the sport, most definitely has players considering on how they're going to spend their money and where they're going to put their money for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously they're gonna miss those guys. They're gonna miss those guys pretty big. And some of the other big roster things going on right now. This one I've talked about a handful of times already, and Coach, me and you talked about it earlier as well. The Rams cut Jared Cook, Chris Long, and James Laurinaitis. And as I said before, I understand Chris Long because he's 30, he's battled some injuries here and there. He'd still be serviceable on the defensive line, but Jared Cook's a pretty good tight end and a great big target for any quarterback, and James Laurinaitis is the heart and soul of the defense. It just baffled me that a handful of those would get cut at the same time.
Well, Laurinaitis, my thought about that was, again, and coaches talked about this before, about pricing yourself out of the league, and that, you know, I think they saw the writing on the wall. This guy's going to command big dollars. They're in the midst of a move to L.A. There's a lot of things they're going to have to do just to shore themselves up in that market and become very decent very quickly. And sometimes, you know, much like Carolina with them losing or at least cutting Charles Johnson, I mean, perfect example. I mean, not that the guy couldn't play and not that the guy wasn't pivotal, but he got an $11 million cap hit, and now they've got $26 million, you know, in cap space to spend in free agency for a team that's already pretty decent. So, again, I think it's just that with that guy, it was just a case of pricing himself out of the market. Did we lose Coach?
We might have. I think we got him
going
on here. Oh, there it is. Yeah, Coach, like we were talking about, you know, a lot of people, initially my thought was that maybe these are three players who either were approached or approached management and said, hey, we're not moving to L.A., but you brought up a good point as far as that.
Got to get Coach a new microphone.
No, I'm sorry. Go right ahead again, guys. I'm sorry. I missed that last piece.
Oh, I was just saying that me and you, when we were talking earlier about this, I said that maybe these three were either approached or they approached management about not moving to L.A., and you actually had a take on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we talked about that. And, again, I think what we were talking about, what Reggie was talking about earlier about pricing yourself out, I think that the move had nothing to do with those guys being able to say one way or the other whether they were going to be able to make the transition if the team moves to L.A. or whatnot. I think a lot of it had to do with they didn't see a value in trying to trade them and or try to pick up draft picks for them. Again, when you're looking at what it costs to keep a player under this current climate, it's totally different. And now you're just going to start seeing teams get younger and younger. And with that, the draft now is going to become more and more a big piece of this, because the one piece of it that we did not talk about was the fact that the rookie contracts play a role in safe havering a lot of teams now. So when you're taking a kid and you're drafting him and you're saying, okay, I can put him on a 3 or 4 year deal, and I think Russell Wilson had even a 5 possibly on the rookie contract, is giving teams a lot more flexibility in where they want to place the value of players in the future, fighting for bigger contracts. So now, you know, once you get past the 6 year mark or 7 year mark, now it's just going to be really, really tough to hold on to players who have, you know, balloon contracts on the back end of the contracts that they signed coming off their rookie contract.
Oh, yeah, sure. And, you know, speaking of being flexible with the cap and everything like that, you know, the Jets released 4-time Pro Bowler corner Antonio Cromartie. It'll save $8 million towards the cap. And as I mentioned earlier to you, Coach, one Rex Ryan said that Mr. Cromartie is welcome to join him in Buffalo.
Right, and that's what you're going to start seeing veteran coaches do. They're going to start looking at, and that's a trend I'm beginning to watch take place now. You're starting to find a lot of the veteran coaches pick up on teams that have a lot more money in their salary caps because they know if they can just get through a decent season or two, that on the backside of it, they have more than enough money to go pick up the players that they need to go ahead and solidify the team and push it over to play, you know, to become postseason teams as well as possible Super Bowl teams in the future. So you know, start watching that trend as well. A lot of veteran coaches going to organizations that might not be doing that well, but they're not doing that well because they have a lot of money that they're trying to learn how to spend or looking at the futuristic possibilities of organizations that's going to have to trim back a lot of veteran players so that they'll have that as a coffer for them later in probably year two or three of their contract as coaches.
Reggie, do you think the Falcons should take a flyer on Cromartie?
No, I don't think he fits what we're trying to do or what Atlanta's trying to do, at least not what Quinn's trying to do. I think if there was anybody that they would have possibly taken a look at on the defensive end and really looked at outside of that linebacking core, I think Josh Norman would have probably been about the only guy that they may have gone after because he fits what the attitude and the style of play that Quinn is going after. I think Cromartie's a bit of a gambler, too much of a gambler. They definitely need to look at someone else on the corner side, but I don't think it's him. I think if they don't go draft, they'll go someone younger.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We'll get into Mr. Norman here in a second. Go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I think that they'll draft Reggie because Quinn is a very good coach, and he has a lot of foresight versus hindsight. So he's looking deep into this year's draft and even next year at players that are out there. But I think what he has a keen sense on, he's looking at a lot of players that people don't see. A lot of practice squad players, a lot of guys that are third-string guys, but they are right down on the cuff in the right organizations of being able to come out and play. So, again, I think you're going to see a lot of aggressive moves this time in Atlanta than you've seen in the past. You're going to see them make a lot of moves down to bring a lot of bodies in because their scouts have really, really been out there combing the landscape, if you will, of college football on diamonds in the rough. And I think Atlanta's they're about to take a facelift because they're going into this new facility and they will have the opportunity to grow these young guys over the next couple of years. So look for Atlanta to become a lot younger over these next two drafts for sure.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And for the next three stories, I think I wish we would have pre-recorded the soundbite, but I think collectively we could all say, well, it is the Cowboys. I'm going to say all three stories, and then we'll briefly go over them. Former Cowboy Joseph Randall has been arrested five times, including 2 weeks ago was the fifth time, in the last 17 months. Second story, Randy Gregory has been suspended the first four games for a positive marijuana test. And, of course, the Cowboys say they are done with Greg Hardy because apparently his partying and kind of wild lifestyle is still rampant even though he plays well on the field. I think we can all collectively say, well, it is the Cowboys.
Right. And they've always set the stage for that type of behavior. I mean, even going after Dez Bryant, they've always, you know, Jerry Jones has prided himself on his ability, whether it's, you know, in his own mind or in that reality of bringing in those trouble guys. And I also think it goes back to the coach, man. If you're going to bring those types of guys in, you've got to have a coach that commands the locker room. And I just don't think Jason Garrett is that guy that can do that when you're bringing in those high-risk, high-reward players.
Well, I think with the Cowboys altogether, the biggest problem is that, you know, anytime they are starting to face those type of dilemmas, they will go with a veteran coach for a couple of years to kind of thin things back, and then they'll come back with a younger coach. In the case of Jason Garrett, he's been there for a while. One of the pressures that he does not have, at least that I see, is the fact that when they get to the point they're bringing in free agent acquisitions and also looking at draft players, he doesn't play a big role in that as much as Mr. Jones and his son and Will McClay does as far as the draft picks are concerned. So, again, I agree with you, Reginald. They tend to like to roll the dice. They're riverboat gamblers in Dallas, and they've done that for years, and they pretty much have trademarked themselves as being the team that knows how to somehow manage to a certain degree dysfunctionality in a player. However, as you're beginning to see now, and I mentioned it earlier with salary caps and rookie contracts, I don't know if they're going to be able to afford to keep that type of marquee up any longer. It costs the team so much more in distraction, in fights and things of that nature. You're just not going to be able to function like that moving forward as an NFL team if you're constantly trying to talk up. You know, you're constantly in the news or the media as it pertains to off-the-field issues, which inevitably over time has shown an evolutionary effect on players on the field as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And real quickly, the last two notes before we talk about franchise tags. Roger Goodell's salary in 2014 was $34.1 million. Me and you, Coach, were talking earlier, and Reg, you'll probably agree. That means he took a pay cut because I swear he was making 40, or maybe that was last year he made 40. And then the Hall of Fame game is going to be the Colts versus the Packers on August 7th in Canton, Ohio. The reason it's the Colts and the Packers is because Tony Dungy, Marvin Harrison, and Brett Favre are all going into the Hall of Fame, and obviously they have a storied history with those franchises.
Right, right. It should be a great game. Happy for those guys. I've been reading back and forth about this feud of words going on between Harrison and Terrell Owens. Don't know where that came from. But, yeah, that should be a great game and a great lead up to that. I think those are three great guys to go in. Harrison, I know he put up big numbers. Wasn't as much of a slam dunk to me as Dungy and Brett Favre, but congratulations to him nonetheless.
Yeah, those three guys going to the Hall of Fame are well deserved. The Hall of Fame game is just going to be the cherry on top for, you know, showing them the organizations that they played for, the loyalty that they had to those organizations and the careers that has now since been tucked away. But there again, to get your head in Canton says that you did some phenomenal things. Every good player did not make it there, but every great player is housed there. So I most definitely would like to tip my hat and salute all three of those gentlemen for their Hall of Fame being a Hall of Fame inductees. I can't wait to hear the ceremonial speech from Coach Dungy. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think Dungy's will be the most sincere and heartfelt and inspirational probably. Marvin Harrison's been running his mouth all day about Terrell Owens, so his may be interesting. But I feel like Brett Favre's is going to be like almost off the wall. It's going to be really funny and crazy in the only way that he could be. So I really look forward to his.
Absolutely. I was thinking the same. Dungy as well. But I think Brett Favre's is probably going to be pretty. I mean, that guy came from a long way. Obviously, I'm still hurt that we got rid of him. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, but I've made the argument the whole time. If his tenure in Atlanta doesn't go the way it does, then I don't know if he evolves into the Brett Favre that he becomes. I think he needed that kind of somebody to light the fire under him to show him he can do better things.
Well, absolutely. I'm pretty sure you'll hear Mike Sherman's name being mentioned quite a bit during his speech because, you know, he gave him he rolled the dice on him.
And you know, as far as Favre's speech, does he give a shout out to the masseuse at the end of his career?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah,
unfortunately, Homer, it is.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that comes out.
Yeah, I had to do that. Brett Favre is probably my favorite of all time, at least to this point, and I grew up watching him. So if I can't take a jab at him, then I don't think nobody can.
Hey, we didn't do it, Mr. Farr. Blaming Jeremy.
Exactly. You know, that was before, you know, with all the things involved in that, that was before smartphones, really, and he was still doing that stuff.
I'm going to let you have that one, Jeremy.
Documented. I'm not making any of that up. But that leads us to the last part of the show here, and we're going to talk about a couple of the franchise tag guys. I'm going to quickly go over the list, and we'll just kind of pick out the ones, the bigger stories here. Of course, Von Miller, Justin Tucker, Kirk Cousins, Josh Norman, Muhammad Wilkerson, Cordy Glenn, shout out to the UGA alum there, Alshon Jeffrey, Eric Berry, Tremaine Johnson, and Olivier Vernon. Which ones of those really stick out to you guys?
Eric Berry was a surprise. That one was a surprise. I know he came off, you know, obviously was able to beat cancer and come back to the field, but I didn't expect the franchise tag on him. I did expect it on Norman and Von Miller, as well as Kirk Cousins, given just the troubles they were having trying to get a contract negotiation. Now, I like the way they've done it. You know, I would have liked to see Atlanta take that same approach with Mr. Ryan and, you know, kind of a wait and see. Let's see if you can do it again type of deal before we, you know, carve out this $100 million contract to you. So, but everybody else, you know, made sense.
The one that stuck out to me, and I was a little surprised, that they actually gave him a franchise tag versus looking at some other options with him was Wilkerson. He had a lot of injuries. He's been coming off injuries the last couple of years. So for them to tag him, because they still feel that there's value there, but, you know, at what cost to the team will that value be? Everybody else was not a real shock to me. I think that, again, this is kind of baiting the waters to see what you can get. And they're now trying to set new market values for those players. But hopefully the players as well as their agents are going to be smart enough again. And like I said, I've mentioned it before over the last couple of years, guys, they don't allow themselves to price themselves out the league as a result of someone coming after you with what I call overinflated salary, you know, salary numbers. So, again, I wish all those guys well. I think Josh is going to command a high number. But the problem with it is that if Mr. Norman takes this number, then he goes to that team and he has to become a Revis, a Sanders. He has to be that true lockdown corner without help. So I look at him as a system guy more so as I do as a true cover corner. He has some, you know, he has some ability there. He has some tangibles that are exciting, but he has still a lot of work to do before you can just label him as a premier. So when you're looking at these guys and they're tagging right now, they're saying, yes, value is there. We know that. But we don't know what the market value is, and that's why they tag them like that.
And that's interesting you brought that up, Coach, because I was going to ask you, I kind of had that thought about Mr. Norman as well, is was he more of a system guy, much like Richard Sherman and some of these other guys, that in the system they are great. And that's really my hesitancy with Mr. Trevathan. Trevathan out in Denver. You know, is he possibly that Ellerby who was lights out in Baltimore, then goes to Miami and everywhere else he goes and just tanks, right? Is Norman that same type of guy? So it's interesting you brought that to the table.
Yeah, he's a system guy, no doubt. And the reason why I know that because I coach corner that I've watched him play. I actually coached his brother, his older brother. And the one thing I see in Josh is that he's very aggressive, but you must understand why he's aggressive. He's aggressive because he has an inside linebacker that's helping him with slants, and he's just covering a lot of outs and what we call the intermediate routes, everything that's coming over 10 to 12 yards. So you see him a little bit more aggressive with a safety over the top. Well, any corner should be able to do that. Now, again, I don't want this to be misconstrued that I don't think that he's a good player, and I don't think that he can become one of the premier shutdown corners in the league. What I am saying is if you go back and you rewind the tape and you see when they isolated and Atlanta did a wonderful job of isolating him with Julio Jones, you saw what I was talking about. You saw Julio Jones basically have his way with Norman in that game. I mean, it was a different type of animal altogether. So there again, some of this confidence that he has is built around a system that allows him to be able to do certain things that he normally would not be able to do if they put him on the number one receiver on the other team, and they put him in space. And so I want you to kind of watch it this year, as he's going to have to either go back to Carolina and work on that, or he's going to go for greener pastures, but he now must be all of that without the help of a system.
Yeah, I agree with both you guys on that. The two of note I really wanted to bring up, and you guys kind of went over them, but Olivia Vernon had the transition tag as far as the franchise tag, the transition tag, in that anybody can offer him a contract, but Miami has the option to match it. Of course, Alex Mack, that we talked about a couple minutes ago, had the same thing from Cleveland a couple years ago, and Jacksonville offered him like a 4-year deal. Cleveland easily matched it, and he stayed up there, but he's opted out, so we know he can go wherever he wants now. The other one was Kirk Cousins in Washington, not just because I might be in the second row of the bandwagon of Kirk Cousins currently, but in getting franchise tagged, Washington has pretty much told the rest of the league that Kirk Cousins is a $20 million quarterback, because the franchise tag is like 19 and a half. So I really think they kind of screwed themselves on this one, and I'm not saying Kirk Cousins couldn't be a $20 million quarterback, even given – you know, the Andy Dalton contracts and some of those that have come up, but, you know, fair market value, he's anywhere between 13 to 14, in my opinion. But, you know, I've already heard that Kirk Cousins has either already signed his franchise tender or he's going to do it the next day or so, and I definitely commend the effort. Sign that before they take it off the table.
Right, yeah, he actually has already signed it. And you know what, Jeremy, it speaks to you touched on it a little bit, too, in that there's this consensus that there aren't very many good quarterbacks in this draft, and I would offer that there aren't many very many franchise quarterbacks in the league right now. I mean, those guys that you can say, you know, can put a team on their back and actually really truly command $100 million contracts. I think they're very few, right? Less than six or seven, in my opinion. So, I mean, it just speaks to what the type of league that we're in now, man. I mean, but I take nothing away from him since he's been at the helm. He's definitely done a lot to at least give that position a little bit more, solidified a little bit more than what it has been in the previous years, although some may say it was because they got rid of the OC that was there. But, you know, that being said, it just really speaks to the type of league that we're in now.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. Well, we ran through 2.5 weeks worth of stuff. I think we paid a good homage to Roddy in case he doesn't come back. My actual overall prediction on him is that he's going to play 1 to 2 years somewhere else. My guess, if I had to put a stake on it, is Tennessee. He'll play 1 or 2 years there. He'll retire, and he'll be the first guy in the Raptors at the new stadium.
Absolutely. I can see that happening.
I did you both on that. I think I can realistically see that taking place as well.
Well, then I guess that's going to do it for us this week. So as we ride off into the sunset for this week, of course, Falcon Zone will be every 3 weeks. So I think it'll be right before the draft will be our next Falcon Zone. Of course, as always, you guys are welcome to join us on Jaguar Zone. We'll be live here on Blog Talk Radio next Thursday. And then, of course, we're still in our weekly shows of Revolution Zone on Tuesdays and GSU Panther Zone on Wednesdays. You guys are welcome to drop on those as well. But for the coach, Haywood Hill, and the King A.T. Alien, the returning King A.T. Alien, good to have you back, King. Reggie Walker, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. This has been Falcon Zone. Appreciate you guys dropping by. We'll see you in 3 weeks. Go Falcons.